Trump fleeced America, enriched himself and his family. Next up, we speak to the attorney suing Columbia University and its affiliated hospitals on behalf of more than 300 more patients who say they were sexually assaulted by the former Columbia University gynecologist Robert Haddon over a span of decades. They say Columbia shielded the sexual predator. Stay with us.
She just wants to be beautiful. She goes unnoticed. She knows no limits. She craves attention. She praises an image. She prays to be sculpted by the sculptor. Oh, she don't see the light that's shining deeper than the eyes can find it. Maybe we are made of blind souls. She tries to cover up her pain and cut her woes away. Cause cover girls don't cry after the face is made. But there's a hope that's waiting for you in the dark. You should know you're beautiful just the way you are. And you don't have to change a thing. The world could change its heart. No scars, so you're beautiful. With stars and we're beautiful.
Oh. Scars to your beautiful. By Alicia Cara. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Here in New York, as Manoush Shafiq made history Wednesday when she became the first woman to be inaugurated president of Columbia University, the ceremony was protested by well over 100 medical students wearing their white coats, who joined with survivors of sexual abuse by the former Columbia obstetrician-gynecologist Robert Haddon. Dr. Haddon was sentenced to 20 years in prison this year for molesting his patients for over two decades, while Columbia ignored his patients who spoke out, undermined prosecutors, shielded the sexual predator, he said.
Simran Chand, I'm a second-year medical student, and we're here to spread awareness about what's happening with Dr. Robert Haddon and the cover-up that Columbia has perpetuated for the past several decades. It's honestly disgusting, and we're here to demand accountability by our institution and to show that as future medical professionals, we will not stand for this, and we want to make our voices heard.
You protected Robert Haddon!
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 Notify the patient!
Liz Hall, one of the reasons we are here today to notify the patients is because after November 23rd, victims of Robert Haddon, and there are thousands, will not be able to get justice or hold Columbia University accountable. They have been silent this entire time. I was a patient from 2002 to 2012, and I had to find other resources and survivors myself. And luckily, some other women have seen me in the news, and that is the only reason why they know of Robert Haddon in jail.
Another Dr. Haddon survivor who joined the medical students at the protest was Evelyn Yang. She's the wife of the former presidential candidate Andrew Yang. She has said Haddon sexually abused her during her first pregnancy in 2012.
As soon as I walked through the gates, there were hundreds of medical students in their white lab coats in the aisles, in the walkways, on the lawns, and they were just spreading the word about how Columbia has still failed to notify Dr. Robert Haddon patients that he is a convicted sex felon. So I was overwhelmed with just appreciation that they would take on this cause. And I realize it's not necessarily for us, for the survivors of Dr. Haddon, although it is very much in support of us, because we were harmed by him, and we believe that there are still hundreds, if not thousands, of Haddon patients who still do not know that he is a convicted sex offender, a sex predator, and they deserve to know. I mean, wouldn't you want to know if your OBGYN had sexually assaulted 500 other patients? But I also think that it's especially meaningful that these are medical students, because the prosecutors called Dr. Haddon a predator in a white coat. So they're walking around protesting wearing their white coats because, you know, they are going to swear an oath of no harm. And the harm in this case wasn't just perpetrated by Dr. Haddon, it was perpetrated by the university. So the expose in ProPublica exposed how they had covered up for him and enabled him for decades. And that's really perhaps an even bigger betrayal. And I came today to really support the students in the community and their call for action.
Everyone was chanting, notify the patients. Why is that so significant in this year?
So it's significant because of the Adult Survivors Act that I, along with other survivors, fought very hard to pass, which opens up a look-back window, regardless of the statute of limitations. If you are a sexual assault survivor in the state of New York, you have until November 23rd, 2023 to file a claim, and that window is closing soon. So Columbia has an opportunity now, especially with the new president, to turn the page, to show that they care about patients, they care about the community in a meaningful way, backed with action. And if they can notify patients, then patients have a chance to, take some action.
And the significance of this being the inauguration of the first woman president of Columbia University?
Well, President Shafiq, she has a gynecologist. She knows how vulnerable it is to sit in that chair and to, and she knows... She knows what it's like to be a woman, to be subjected to that regularly. And it wouldn't cross your mind to be violated by a doctor in that way. And she has a chance to reduce the harm that the previous administration perpetrated. And we are very disappointed that, to date, she seems to be taking a page from the old playbook, and she's giving us a lot of, we're sorry that you were hurt. We're heartbroken for you, but she has still failed to take any meaningful action to notify the patients or commission a third-party independent investigation into the cover-up that led to Haddon abusing women for over 20, 30 years.
That's Evelyn Yang, one of the first to speak out against Dr. Haddon. I spoke to Evelyn Yang as the first woman president of Columbia University was being inaugurated. Columbia University Irving Medical Center and New York Presbyterian Hospital reached two settlements with hundreds of Haddon victims in 2021 and 2022. This week, 301 additional former patients of Haddon who alleged they were sexually exploited and abused by him filed a new lawsuit that argues Dr. Haddon is, quote, the most prolific serial sexual predator in New York State history. For more, we're joined by the attorney who's been suing Columbia for over a decade to hold the university accountable for covering up Haddon's abuse, Anthony DiPietro. He's joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah, also Evelyn Yang's attorney. Thank you so much for being with us. And so as this was playing out on this beautiful blue sky day on Wednesday up at Columbia University, the victims of Dr. Haddon, together with well over 100 medical students in their white coats, demanding that the university notify the patients. Anthony Pietro, you had just filed yet another lawsuit. Columbia's already paid out something like, what, a quarter of $1 billion to patients of Haddon? Talk about this latest lawsuit.
Yeah, that's correct, Amy, and thank you. The recent filing that we made this past week brings the total victims and survivors of Columbia University and Robert Haddon to over 538 patients. Robert Haddon abused single women, married women, pregnant women, recent mothers. He even abused a 16-year-old who he previously had delivered at her first GYN visit. He literally is the most prolific serial sexual predator in the history of New York State.
So explain, take us back to the beginning. I mean, on Democracy Now!, we've had a number of Haddon's patients on. Can you explain? There's two issues here. One is that Dr. Haddon sexually assaulted, was just found guilty, sentenced to 20 years in prison for sexually assaulting patients. But then there's the issue of what Columbia knew and when the university knew it. Talk about that, Anthony.
Sure. So Columbia knew from the beginning what they were dealing with Robert Haddon at every level. The chairperson, the risk management people, they knew what they were dealing with. But for the past 36 years, they have been covering up this abuse from the public, from the patients, and even from the state prosecutors.
So talk about the evidence that you have of this. In fact, you're in Utah right now. You're in Salt Lake City. Wasn't it a patient now who is in Utah who said they notified Columbia decades ago?
Correct. So one of our clients saw Evelyn Yang on TV a couple years ago and said, and reached out to us and said, hey, you know, this guy abused me in 1993, and I wrote a letter to the chairman, and the chairman wrote back.
The chairman?
And I believe, you know, the chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology wrote back, acknowledged that she was abused, and said he was going to take care of the problem, but he was going on vacation next week, and he would deal with it when he got back, and he never did anything.
We also had Lori Kenyuk on recently, another of Dr. Haddon's patients. She's the patient who is in his office, and to her horror, she felt him licking her. She called her partner. She was very pregnant. Her partner raced to where she was and was calling the police repeatedly. The police came to their home, then went right to the Columbia Hospital where Dr. Haddon was, his office, and had him arrested. So Columbia absolutely knew at that point. Can you talk about that case? Yet he was back at work the next week after being arrested by police for sexual assault.
Amy, it is outrageous. This guy was arrested at 4 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. Every person at the university, at the hospital, who needed to know, knew. Mary Dalton, who was the current and still is the current chairperson of obstetrics and gynecology, knew. John Ivanko, Haddon's direct supervisor, knew. Jane Booth, general counsel for Columbia University, knew. And what they did is they got their lawyers, they got the arrest vacated, and they let him back that next Tuesday so he can continue abusing patients. 5 weeks later is when he assaulted Evelyn Yang.
So he came back and then went on to assault. Now, this is the question. How many people have been assaulted by Dr. Haddon? You heard at that Columbia University protest, the demand, the medical students repeating over and over, chanting, notify the patients. Talk about the significance of this. The only entity that knows who all of Haddon's patients are is Columbia University, is that right? For all of the people he's seen for decades. What has been officially put out, aside from people seeing shows like Democracy Now! Or reading ProPublica, the investigations, or seeing someone like Evelyn Yang on television, how do people know whether they can come forward and the significance of this one-year look back that Governor Hochul signed off on of adult survivors being able to sue only, though, if they report this by November 23rd? In fact, E. Jean Carroll, sexually assaulted by President Trump, used this look back to bring her lawsuit that the attack took place decades ago.
Sure. Amy, make no mistake about this. These are Columbia University's patients. These weren't Robert Haddon's patients. These were patients of Columbia University. Columbia has the medical records. Columbia has the patient list. Columbia did all the billing. In 2016, the state of New York ordered that all of Haddon's patients be notified that he lost his license. But Columbia is saying that the burden isn't on them, it's on Robert Haddon. That is outrageous. They weren't Haddon's patients, they were Columbia's patients, and Columbia's the only one that could possibly contact them. But they're refusing to do it. And that's why we're pushing. And here's why this is important, okay? It's not just about the Adult Survivors Act, although that is important. I've gotten countless phone calls from women who, you know, they happen to see this on the news or they see it on social media, and they call me and they're like, oh my God, this happened to me 15 years ago. And I've been carrying this around thinking that I was the only person, like maybe I did something wrong to invite this. They need to know that they're not alone. They shouldn't be having to carry this burden around with them for their entire lives because Columbia's administration refuses to send them a notification letter to let them know that Robert Haddon is a convicted sexual predator who they covered up for.
I want to turn to Belkis Hall, who I also spoke to at Wednesday's protest at Columbia University.
This is Belkis Hall. I was a patient from 2005 and to 2010. I had asked my friends that had seen him if they thought there was something wrong, and they said no. So I continued to go, thinking it was natural. It wasn't only until last December that I found out that I have been abused over and over. He loved to give pain to his patients, and we thought that was normal. Let it not normalize it. If you ever feel there's something strong, listen to your gut, and speak out.
Yes.
Keep speaking out. Keep spreading the word, because this is not over.
Yes.
That was Belkis Hall speaking through a loudspeaker and speaking to, along with Lori Maldonado, another guest we've had on, a victim of Dr. Haddon, through a little bullhorn, as they also thank the medical students for coming forward. One of the things that Belkis Hall talked about was the pain that Dr. Haddon had put these patients through, like Lori Maldonado, who went for a checkup. She didn't know that most people don't go for endless checkups during their 9 months, but Haddon kept calling her in 2 months before he gave birth. And as she lay on the examining table, he put his hand up her and punched. And these women at Columbia talked about his inflicting pain, that was part of his sickness and his crime. Anthony DiPietro, if you could comment on this.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of patterns, right? And this is absolutely one of them. He had this sadistic streak where he would inflict pain on women. Oftentimes he would do it if they weren't compliant with other things. And this was part of what he was doing. And again, Columbia knew the entire time. But instead of protecting patients, what they were doing is they were protecting a predator.
So at this point, how has Columbia explained why they haven't sent a letter out to every one of the patients they know Haddon had?
Right. There's no explanation for it. We have been pushing them for years, for 5, 6, 7 years. Send out a letter to the patients, notify them that they didn't do anything wrong. They were exposed to this predator. But their excuse is that the burden is on Haddon, right? Because the order from the state was directed at Haddon. But again, these weren't Haddon's patients. And what is Columbia saying? Is Columbia saying that if Robert Haddon shows up at the medical records office and says, hey, give me, you know, the names and home addresses of all these women that I've been abusing since 1987, that Columbia is going to turn that information over to him? That's ridiculous.
I wanted to go to another clip when we did speak to Lori Maldonado, the former patient of Robert Haddon between 2000, who gave testimony at his sentencing. She described what happened to her when she was 9 months pregnant.
I was sexually assaulted by Robert Haddon 2 days before the birth of my child. I went in for, my checkup. My ex-husband was in the room with me, and we were just excited. I remember that in the office room, I went to the bathroom, and my mucus plug had dropped, so I was really imminent away from the birth, and we were really excited. And Haddon came in the room, and he had a glimmer in his eye, and I thought that glimmer was that he was excited like me for the birth, but now I realize it was an opportunity for him to commit sexual assault. And he later said, "Oh, you know, one more thing, I need to check you." And he took me behind the curtain, away from my husband, and put me on the exam table. And what I thought was, you know, that he was going to check my cervix, just to make sure that the baby was okay. But that's not what happened. What did happen was Haddon used his hands to harm me, and he stuck his fist inside of my vagina. And it was so painful. And I screamed, and I cried out in pain. And he abruptly left the room. My husband at the time came over to me, checked on me. He said, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "No, I'm not okay." And then he asked me a really important question. He said, "Do you feel violated?" And I said, "Yes."
That's Lori Maldonado. To see the whole interview with her, one of Dr. Haddon's survivors, you can go to democracynow.org. Anthony DiPietro, we want to thank you very much for being with us, attorney representing women who are sexually abused by former Columbia University obstetrician, gynecologist Robert Haddon. DiPietro has filed a new lawsuit against the university and its affiliated hospitals on behalf of an additional 301 patients who were allegedly sexually assaulted by Haddon. Also, this related news. In California, George Tyndall, the former University of Southern California gynecologist accused of sexual abuse by hundreds of students, was found dead at his home this week. USC agreed to pay over $1 billion in settlements to survivors. Survivors have said Tyndall raped or forcibly touched them, made racist and misogynistic comments while he sexually abused them. Tyndall was awaiting trial and out on a $1.3 million bail. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with one of the 75,000 healthcare workers with Kaiser Permanente who walked off the job this week in the largest strike of healthcare workers in U.S. history, in California, in Oregon, in Washington, Colorado, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. Talks have failed to yield a new agreement as workers seek higher pay, better staffing, improvements in their pension plans and other benefits. For more, we're joined on the picket line in Clackamas, Oregon, by Kevin Darden, patient access representative and a member of the union's local bargaining team at Kaiser Permanente's Sunnyside Medical Center. And Meg Neamey, we're going to begin with you, president of SEIU Local 49. Meg, can you talk about the significance of this three-day strike and if you've gotten concessions from Kaiser Permanente?
Yeah, I mean, this is a historic strike. 75,000 Kaiser Permanente workers walking off the job to tell Kaiser executives that it's time to end the short staffing crisis.
Can you tell us where you are right now as we look at you in the dark because it's so early in the morning?
I'm out front of Kaiser Sunnyside Medical Center here in Clackamas, Oregon. Our members are setting up their strike line this morning, getting ready to begin our picketing activities.
We want to bring Kevin Darden into the conversation, a patient access representative member of the union's local bargaining team at Kaiser Permanente Sunnyside Medical Center. Kevin, can you talk about your demands and the significance of this largest strike of healthcare workers in U.S. history?
Yes, good morning. What we're here today is we're asking our Kaiser executives to bargain in good faith with us, the frontline healthcare workers. We have the proposals and we have the solutions to solving Kaiser's short staffing crisis. And we're just asking them to come to us and meet with us. We have those solutions and we're hoping they could come and bargain in good faith. Mm-hmm.
And can you talk, Magnimi, about the strategy of doing this 3-day strike?
Yeah, the Kaiser members are out here taking action to get Kaiser to listen to us around patient care, make sure that the patients are getting the care that they actually need. And our members made a decision to say, you know, we're going to walk off the job. We want to do this for a short amount of days, for 3 days. But we have let Kaiser executives know that if we cannot come to an agreement that solves the short staffing crisis, that we'll be out here again.
And can you talk about the scale of the strike? Who's involved? Talking about nurses, medical technicians, pharmacists. Talk about who's out on the strike and also your concern about continuing to care for patients.
Right now, out on this strike across the country are healthcare workers that have been essential workers from across the hospitals and clinics. So we have medical assistants, licensed practical nurses, housekeepers. There are pharmacists. There are dietary workers. There are dental workers. There are literally hundreds and thousands of different workers who are often the people that are closest to delivering patient care. They're the first people that you see. They're the people that are right next to you at the bedside. And all of them have come out here because they care so much about their patients. And they're really concerned about how they've seen a deterioration of care, a deterioration of patients being able to get access to care. And they felt like it was very important that they took this strong stand so that Kaiser Permanente executives will actually turn course and reprioritize patient care.
Kaiser Permanente is the largest nonprofit healthcare organization in the United States. Just how big is it, Magnimi?
No, Kaiser Permanente is a giant healthcare institution. We know that they made over $3 billion in profits already this year. They have $114 billion invested in the stock market. They have a lot of resources. For employees that are represented by our coalition of unions, there are 85,000 Kaiser Permanente employees that are represented in this coalition. There are 75,000 of those workers who had contracts expired and were able to take this action.
And Kevin Darden, can you tell us the response of people in Oregon around you in Clackamas, the public officials, and what this 3-day strike has meant?
Yeah, so over the past 2 days that we've been out here, we've had state representatives come out and join us here on the picket line. We've had providers, nurses, community members, Kaiser patients come to us. And, you know, they're driving on this boulevard behind me. They're honking their horns. They're giving us hearts. They're giving us a thumbs up. The community knows the struggles that Kaiser is going with the staffing issues. They know that they can do better, and they're giving us their full support. So we're proudly out here. We're here for our patients. We're here for our community. Kaiser can do better.
And patient support, the level of patient support, Kevin, as you demand more staff so that more patients can be dealt with and wait on shorter lines.
Yes, that's correct. You know, we saw here in the Northwest, our urgent care and pharmacy hours slashed. They used to be open until 9. Now they're open till 7. And so our members are feeling that. When members call our appointment centers and they tell them to see their primary care provider, it's 4 to 8 weeks out. You know, that's a serious issue for them. They need care. We're known for our 5-star quality care. And that's what our community is demanding, is Kaiser go back to its roots and provide that excellent service that they're known for.
Kevin Darden, want to thank you for being with us. Patient Access Representative, member of the union's local bargaining team at Kaiser Permanente's Sunnyside Medical Center in Clackamas, Oregon. And Magnimi, president of SEIU Local 49. They were both joining us from the picket line. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a bend in time.